On this episode of Ninja World,
media will not show the magnitude of this crowd. Even I, when I turned on today, I looked and I saw thousands of people here, but you don't see hundreds of thousands of people behind you because they don't want to show that. We have hundreds of thousands of people here, and I just want them to be recognized by the fake news media. Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore, and that's what this is all about. We're gathered together in the heart of our nation's capital for one very, very basic and simple reason: to save our democracy. Created the greatest economy in history. We rebuilt our military. We get you the biggest tax cuts in history, right? We got you the biggest regulation cuts. We've done things like nobody's ever thought possible. And that's part of the reason that many people don't like us. So let's walk down Pennsylvania Avenue. I want to thank you all. God bless you and God bless America. Thank you all for being here. This is incredible.
Hi, this is Newt. Due to the virus, I'm recording from home, so you may notice a difference in audio quality. I'm going to explore with my good friend Pete Hegseth. Where do we go from here with the 74 million strong Trump supporters and their concerns about the country? Pete's a perfect person to talk with us about because he's the co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend in May of 2020. Pete's second book, American Crusade, makes the case for a political and cultural crusade to fight for America's freedom. Pete is an Army veteran of Afghanistan, Iraq, and Guantanamo Bay, who holds two Bronze Stars and a Combat Infantryman's Badge for his time overseas. He still serves as an Army Major. We're going to talk about the fact that we have to move forward, that the crusade has to continue. And nobody can describe that better than Pete Hegseth, who's the author of American Crusade, Our Fight to Stay Free. But I was commenting, Pete, that I thought on Fox and Friends, you were just brilliant the other day. And part of it is, I think it came out of how many towns you've been in where you've had breakfast and you've sat around talking to people. Before we get into more details, can you just talk for a minute about how did that experience change you?
Mr. Speaker, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's always an honor. Anytime someone like you sees a segment and appreciates it, that means the world. So thank you. You know, I think my entire perspective, this whole thing, is shaped by precisely what you said. I say this without hyperbole. I feel like I've spent as much time as anybody, if not more than anybody in the media, actually spending quality time with Trump supporters. And thankfully, with Fox and Friends, I've traveled across the country. And, you know, we do segments on camera and we do two or three of them over the course of 3 hours. But then you spend the other 3-4 hours chatting on the side, talking with people, conversations, you know, booth to booth, table to table with hundreds of people, all of which have come out at 4 or 5 in the morning because they're passionate about the country and they're passionate about their president and they have a particular point of view. And not just that, I've gone to rallies across the country and speeches, and it's given me a deep reservoir of appreciation and understanding for who these people are. So when I went to the mall on Wednesday, January 6th, for that Save America rally that the president had before everyone went to Capitol Hill, I was there on assignment for Fox and Friends to talk to people and get reaction to the speech. And nothing I saw was unfamiliar to me. The only thing that was different was the size. The size of it, and I know, you know, there's much has been made about crowd sizes and this and that. Ultimately, this is one of the biggest gatherings of Trump supporters I've ever seen, and I've been to some of the biggest rallies he's had, and utterly familiar with the viewpoint that these folks had. And there's two comments that struck me in the crowd. I've heard variations of them before, but one of them was, The reason I support Donald Trump so much is because he's not in the pockets of anybody. He's not bought and paid for. The only special interest he has is me, is the country. And that whole disconnect that the media can never understand of the idea that a billionaire from Manhattan who used to be a Democrat could be the voice for all of these people in middle America is a very real thing, not false, not based on conspiracy, not based on lies, anything. It's a real deal. And the other one was a gentleman described himself as a born again American. And I had not heard that phrase before. Maybe you have, but I thought it summarized so well how these people feel. They feel like Donald Trump has awoken them to the reality of what they're facing. And they're told that they're racists and they're conspiracy theorists and all these other things. But what they believe is they've been reawoken to first principles that are under assault from the left. And whether it's indoctrinating their kids or the borders being open or cancel culture or censoring stories and their own content, they've seen all the double standards. So Donald Trump exposed that for them. And ultimately, they were there because they realized what the culture is doing to patriots, to conservatives, to Trump supporters. And then they've been told, Newton, I think this is the special point of how we got to this inflection point. They've been told, and I've said it, I'm sure you've said it, everyone said it, well, if you want to change the narrative, then you got to beat them at the ballot box. You got to go to the midterms. You got to go to the presidential. That's where you change the trajectory of the country. And these are all people who have, you know, many of which have been faithful voters. And then they feel like that's not available to them. They feel like if my vote isn't fairly counted, if that's rigged against me too, what is my recourse? What is my option? And what makes this group so different that I saw, this is not like Antifa or other left-wing events where you see almost universally 20-somethings, agitators who are sort of haven't yet sort of lived much of life and they're just angry because what they were told in the classroom hasn't yet manifested. These are 40, 50, 60, 70-year-olds, married, kids, grandkids, you know, middle America, black, white, gay, straight, across the board, sort of this universal feeling of what unites them. And the frustration of that day was, you've taken away the one recourse I thought I had in a culture that's completely under siege. And you mentioned American Crusade. I wrote a book about this before COVID, before the riots, and certainly before what happened on January 6th. But you could see it coming because the political sphere was the only place where patriots felt like they could still win. And now they feel that's rigged against them too. And they can't even talk about it lest they be called a conspiracy theorist. So I wasn't surprised, Newt, by what happened. That's not condoning it. It was amazing, Newt, to see the crowd immediately start walking. I've never seen anything like it. The speech ended and it was starting to move down the avenue. It was a powerful thing to see. And ultimately, I wasn't surprised because people really are fed up and they don't know what to do.
I also think people were a little bit shocked because they'd been told by everybody else over and over again all summer that, you know, being violent in protest is okay and occasional riots are just fine. I think very, very few of the Trump supporters are inclined to do anything like that. If you look at the last 6 months, where was all the violence? It was on the left. And where was all the support for the violence? It was left-wing reporters and left-wing commentators and Democrats who all thought it was just fine. I get a little tired of this radical double standard, but I'm curious. It seemed to me that the level of frustration is very deep and it's very real. And I'm curious from your perspective, when you actually watched it, what was your reaction watching?
My reaction watching it was, what did people think was going to happen? Honestly. And that's why I really didn't like the knee-jerk, pearl-clutching response across the spectrum. Republicans, frankly, in many aspects were the worst. Immediate condemnation that everyone involved was involved in an insurrection. And Donald Trump, you know, played these people like fiddles, like dupes. And as a result, they've been lied to and told that the whole election would be overturned. And they thought a fantasy world was going to open up on January 20th. I talked to the people on the mall. I've talked to them a lot. Listen, they believe the election was stolen. They wish there were more recourses. They've watched what happens. They've seen stories be suppressed before Hunter Biden, during and after, unwilling to air anything. I mean, the amazing extent to which the media has now taken to taking the official line of secretaries of states or governors and saying, well, this has been fact checked and debunked because the government officials are telling us that it's not true. When's the last time that's what the media was supposed to do? Reflect and project back upon the populace what government officials are saying because it enhances their narrative. It's unbelievable. So the mindset of these people was not overtly radical. It wasn't violent at all. In fact, if you break down the timeline, Newt, much of what was happening on Capitol Hill, the first incursions and breaking through the barricades, happened while Donald Trump was still speaking. And I talked to people that were there, a lot of people who showed up and were on the grounds and up on the steps, they didn't even know what had happened beforehand. They were just thinking, hey, this is the end of the march and here we are, and it's a celebratory environment. And there are reports, you know, in the New York Post and elsewhere, and just from, you know, common sense, that Antifa folks took advantage of this to try to get to the front and try to agitate and create openings for themselves. They want chaos, ultimately. I could even spot it. You can see the helmets where there's a, you know, Donald Trump bumper sticker on the back quickly put on it so they could look like they wanted to stop the steal. But what they really wanted to do was further the narrative. The double standard that I think crystallizes it the best is, of course, Lafayette Park, across from the White House when the White House was under siege. In fact, Newt, ironically, I was there as well for that. With the National Guard. I was on the other side of it carrying a riot shield. It's not often that majors in the US Army are carrying riot shields, but at that point it was all hands on deck. I'm still a major in the National Guard. We were mobilized. I was out front of the White House. It was one of the most surreal moments I've ever felt, with the lit up White House in the background, bottles and rocks and things being thrown at us, crowds trying to shake the gate down, pushing people back. And I remember the mocking that was given to Donald Trump with just the insinuation that he may have gone to the bunker, that he may have actually moved into safety. That was all okay. All of that was okay. The White House, where the president lives, was under siege. And I was there. It was really under siege. And Comrade Cortez, I will never forget what she said. She said, let this moment radicalize you. Let this moment radicalize you. So a government building for the people is under siege, and their leadership are being told, let this moment radicalize you. Imagine if any member on the Trump side of the spectrum had said similar things. I mean, listen, I got eviscerated on many levels for the comments I made, which were effectively explaining why these people were there and what happened, not explaining away the fact that there were unlawful things done on Capitol Hill. But the other side gets away with a massive double standard. People are not dumb, Newt. These people are not dumb. I mean, you hear what Anderson Cooper said when he said, these are the Olive Garden eating, you know, Holiday Inn Express people. I mean, it's just condescending across the board. That won't hold, especially in an information age where people can get access to information themselves. A lot of people said, hopefully this is a rock bottom where we come up from it. I don't think the left can learn. And I think with the suppression of Donald Trump's Facebook and Instagram, shutting them down completely, they're going to go into hyperdrive, only making the problem worse.
Hey, everybody, it's Giano Caldwell. You may know me as a national political analyst, but today I'm here to tell you about my new podcast series, Out Loud with Giano Caldwell, the sworn enemy of PC culture. I'll interview national guests from all walks of life and real people discussing issues on culture and politics, as well as the controversies that have social media blazing. Listen to Out Loud with Giano Caldwell every Monday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Weren't you startled that they felt they had the power to totally shut down the president of the United States?
I wish I was startled, but no. It's been coming. I mean, this is Orwellian textbook definition. This is what was written about, the whole idea that it's not just the government that pushes authoritarianism, it's corporations, it's technology. Orwell didn't see social media coming, but he talked about the power of technology. It's moral authoritarianism he talked about in Animal Farm in 1984, which is the idea of a leftist groupthink that you must adhere to, a new moral code, that if you don't adhere to it, we will shut you down. What is it? Unpersoning, which is basically cancel culture. I mean, it's the Ministry of Truth, which is what he writes about, the rewriting of history, which is exactly what they want to do. It started with the people's history. I mean, none of this surprises me. It's exactly how the left thinks. Before he even leaves office, they've decided he is persona non grata, which is why when people write his obituary politically, I don't buy it. Listen, I don't know what his future necessarily will be electorally, but he's not going anywhere, and neither is the movement he created. A lot of people on the left, I hear it all the time. This is a cult. This is a cult of Trump. It's garbage. People admire and revere Trump for what he's done, but he merely pulled the curtain back and exposed what existed. So they're going to keep coming after him. If they can shut him down, they'll shut everybody down. We're seeing it right now. It's happening.
That's right. By the way, you know so much about veterans. Did you know anything about Ashley Babbitt, the 14-year Air Force veteran and Trump supporter who was shot and killed by the police at the Capitol?
I didn't know her. I learned, like you did, through stories. What I do know is that she was shot and killed, unarmed. What I do know is that our side's not going to call to defund the Capitol Police. And you didn't see a day two on Capitol Hill. You're not going to see a day three. You're going to see people willing to support law enforcement in an extremely difficult situation, even if it wasn't the proper protocol. All I know is that she deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. She deployed multiple times. She was very passionate. She had a husband out in California. They run a pool business. He didn't travel with her. She was ultimately a patriotic American who felt like her country was being taken from her. She was on Capitol Hill. You know what was pointed out to me? I think Laura Ingraham said it on her show last night. It was really interesting. Do you know, over the course of all the George Floyd riots that took place, where police really were targeted, where buildings really were burned down, where companies that had no connection whatsoever to the oppression that they were protesting about or the police brutality they were posting, they're being burned down. And ultimately, you know that only two rioters were actually shot and killed by police in that entire time frame as a result? And here we have one here. Again, the numbers don't always tell the full story, but all I know is that those Trump supporters, you watch those videos, I've watched tons of them. They were not targeting police intentionally. They were trying to get through barricades, which they shouldn't have tried to get through. All of those things can be said, but ultimately they're walking side by side police oftentimes in some of these hallways because the police know they're not after them. They're making a political statement at the Capitol, specifically the People's House, as opposed to private places, which have no connection at all to the oppression that Black Lives Matter felt, yet they burned them down. There's a huge differences here that get glazed over inside our media. Ashley Babbitt has a right to protest like anybody else, and it's really unfortunate she was killed.
So I'm curious, what was your reaction to the sudden emergence of cries for bipartisanship after this happened?
Never miss an opportunity to exploit Republican vulnerability to immediately cave to be liked by the, you know, 95% of our media, which lives to hate Republicans and Trump supporters. Listen, it's what happens every time. We saw it after the Billy Bush tape. We saw it after Charlottesville. We saw it after really difficult moments where the easiest thing to do is to give in to the immediate narrative, which is that Donald Trump is evil and everyone is racist, and the 25th Amendment must be invoked. And, you know, the people who aren't properly fortified immediately fall for it. And you see it with the way people reacted to this. And I think it's really, really unfortunate that so many Republicans have still yet to learn. You don't have to like everything that happened. You don't have to like every way in which Donald Trump has handled recounts and, you know, everything that's happened since November 3rd. You don't have to agree with his approach on everything. To not then cave on every aspect that all 4 years of his are a disaster because of one march on Capitol Hill, which is effectively what a lot of these Republicans who are caving are giving to the left. You've given away all the gains and you haven't learned how to fight at all. And you don't have to make it about defending every aspect of Donald Trump. Haven't you been awoken to the system that is so rigged against us? Yet here you are immediately caving to it. Why? So that you can be liked by the Washington Post? Or you can be not banned by Twitter for the next 2 months until you commit the next sin. And then you're effectively canceled too. There's just so little internalizing of this. If I may take the prerogative, Mr. Speaker, I'm more interested in your answer to that. I mean, what do you make of the response?
Well, I think you caught a lot of it perfectly. I've always been struck by a couple of things. One is that partly, I think, because the news media is so overwhelmingly Democrat and so hostile, and the permanent bureaucracy is so heavily Democratic, probably in the 97-98% range. I would argue from the bureaucracies I've looked at, they're actually more left than the news media. So what happens to a lot of the Republicans is They're surrounded by all these sort of pleasant people who are just left-wing cuckoos. And they want to be nice to them, and they want to be able to go and have a nice lunch. And so gradually they decide that the things the left-wing cuckoos say make sense, because after all, otherwise you'd be in fights all the time. I would say that at any given moment, somewhere between 20 and 50%, it did vary, it goes up and down, but somewhere between 20 and 50% of the Republican Party is eager to sell out. Just pat them on the head, tell them you'll invite them to your next party. But this proves that they're a wise, mature statesman. You always know in the current system, if somebody's being described as wise and mature, they've almost certainly sold out to the left. But that's been my whole career. I first got started in 1958. I came up through Nixon losing to Kennedy in 60, then Goldwater being annihilated, carrying only five states in 64. Reagan emerging that year. Well, again, the magic of the American system. Barry Goldwater is going down to defeat, carrying only five states. But in October of that year, he gives Reagan time to make a nationwide television address called A Time for Choosing. Reagan comes out of that as probably the most attractive conservative in the country. 2 years later, wins the governorship, and we're off to the races. I also have a deep disadvantage, Pete. You're probably more rational than I am. I think these people are crazy. Start with, why would Schumer and Pelosi, what would possibly motivate them to talk about the 25th Amendment and impeachment on a guy who got 74 million votes, who has already said he's leaving in 13 days? I mean, that is a level of maniacal hatred that is just deranged. Why were the Democrats in the House, and I'm going to spend a lot of my time on this because I think it is so literally insane and such a threat to our civilization. Why would the Democrats in the House adopt a new set of rules which abolishes father, mother, uncle, brother, sister, etc., 29 words that are standard English words, are now eliminated by the House Democrats? I mean, this is worthy of the French Revolution or the Russian or Chinese Revolution. But in America, it's insane. And she's going to get a ton of her people beaten in 2022 because they voted for this stuff. I mean, how do you go home to a normal district and say, yeah, I really think we shouldn't say the word mother anymore? Somebody said to me, so what do we call Mother Teresa at this point? But this is who these people are. And because they are so far out of touch with reality, I don't think they have any sense of what they're doing. And because the news media is so overwhelmingly them, they're constantly reinforced in being crazy.
Hi, this is Rob Smith, and I'm Problematic. As a Black gay Republican, I don't fit into any neat boxes. And because of that, I'm problematic to the political left, which wants me to stay quiet and do what I'm told. But I'm not about that, because no one owns me. The left can't divide us with identity politics. But I'm also problematic to the right, because being problematic is about thinking for yourself and being your own person. Come be problematic with me. Listen to Rob Smith is Problematic every Tuesday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because you do know, probably as well as anybody in America, you know the rhythm and the heart of an amazing number of Trump supporters. When they say to you, look, we got more votes than any president in history, except Biden. So Trump got over 74 million votes. The whole thing is a total mess. We don't trust the courts. We don't trust the Congress. We know the news media is our mortal enemy. What should they do? What do you tell people when they look at you and say, Pete, what should we do now?
Boy, that is the question of the moment. You're entirely correct. One more comment. The irony on Nancy Pelosi is the day she passed that, her Twitter feed said she's a mother and a grandmother. They don't know what to do. That, I think, is the difficulty of this moment. This is why I think you got January 6th. When I wrote American Crusade, the concept was every single aspect of our culture, the schoolroom, the newsroom, tech, bureaucracy, corporations, the military, it's all controlled effectively by the politically correct woke left, which is driving further left because I know you've heard of John O'Sullivan, O'Sullivan's first law. You know, all organizations that are not actually right wing will over time become left wing. We're seeing the manifestation of that, the indoctrination of that, the inculcation of that. How can people go back to their districts and win without father and mother? It's because increasing generations of Americans are being raised to believe gender is a social construct. And so A, look at that and go, okay. And then B, they know that if they run counter to that, they will be canceled. So even if they don't agree with it, they'll be canceled. Now, maybe they'll go to the ballot box, the one sacred, secret place, and vote differently. But even that remains unclear at this point. So you really do have a stacked deck. As I wrote about in the book, I felt like 2020 was the inflection point. If we win, we've got a chance. If we lose, it's the beginning of, I don't want to say the beginning of the end, but without being pessimistic, it's an indication that we can't even win at the ballot box anymore. And I didn't anticipate the rigging and the extra constitutional way they would do mail-in balloting and signature check and all of the guardrails that came off. And so if the ballot box isn't there, that's what you saw. You saw regular, rational, hardworking, tax-paying business owners on the grounds carrying American flags and Trump flags saying, I don't know what else to do. I don't know where else to go. I don't feel like there's another politician out there that is willing to go all the way to the mat, to stare the media to the face and call them the enemy of the state, to try to take on the deep state and the bureaucracy, to take on feckless leadership within your own party, to call the left exactly what they deserve to be called, to take on 1619 and not be afraid to call a 1776 commission. They don't see a politician out there in the current crop that could channel or do what Donald Trump has done, and then their vote for him, they believe, was canceled. So in that one microcosm, the option they felt like they had was, we're going to send a signal. We're not going to go find Democrats. We're not going to go find Antifa members and go assault them. We're going to go to the center of gravity of where we think the corruption is coming from. Yes, a lot of it centered around the vote to certify. Yes, there was a lot of frustration with Mike Pence, much of which was, I think, unwarranted. Let's go to the place where we think the power is being used improperly. And, you know, a lot of people never thought they would get into the Capitol. There were agitators who did, and then it went from there. I've talked to a lot of people that were on those Capitol steps, and they said the amount of love and patriotism and gratitude and appreciation for the fact that they could share their voice, they could be heard, just this one time they could be heard. So I think oftentimes people want to be heard, which Donald Trump has done. He's listened to them and actually delivered for them. And right now there isn't a clear sense of what the next step is. No one wants, you know, a revolution with bullets. That's not what people are talking about. What do I like? I like Convention of States, Article 5. I like the idea of state legislatures taking the power back, which they have the constitutional ability to do. There's a movement afoot. You know, you got to get 36 states. I think there are 22, 21. I'd love to see that build, but I think there's ultimately going to be a growing reaction to the Democratic overreach, to the tech overreach. They're going to overreach even more. And you're going to see, I think, a populist swell of Americans. I still believe unified behind President Trump. There'll be challengers who are going to attempt to poke holes in him, but his armor amongst his base is really strong. So if he had 90% of the Republican Party before Tuesday, he's still got 75 or 80. So all the TV outrage, all the members of Congress outrage who are trying to throw the president under the bus remains disconnected from average Trump supporters who don't feel that way, who look at what happened on the Capitol and they go, you know what? They had it coming. You know what? Enough was enough. You know what? I was excited by that. And again, that doesn't make the violence okay. No one's justifying that, but that's the feeling. You know, don't tell me that you were under siege on Capitol Hill. Oh my goodness, I had to hide in my office. My business has been shut down for a year. I've been told to wear a mask for a year while you don't wear a mask. My business was burned down, and you're worried about a couple of rioters in the People's House as if that's the biggest problem I have in the country? Spare it. Save me. That's the gut reaction people are having. And I think Donald Trump still has the ability to channel that better than anyone else in our politics. What he does next, how he ends, I think does matter. But that's the sentiment.
Listen, I hope you'll be willing to come back from time to time, and let's keep talking about how the movement evolves. I think the left will make itself very vulnerable, and I think these kind of conversations can be really useful to a lot of people.
Well, Mr. Speaker, your voice is needed as much as anybody's right now. You've written the book on it. You've been stalwart on it. You understand the left better than anyone. To know them is to understand what they're trying to do. And so I'm so grateful for everything you do, Mr. Speaker.
I want to thank Pete for being with us. And you can learn more about his books and his work on our show page at NewsWorld.com. NewsWorld is produced by Gingrich 360 and iHeartMedia. Our executive producer is Debbie Myers. Our producer is Garnsey Sloan. And our researcher is Rachel Peterson. The artwork for the show was created by Steve Tendley. Special thanks to the team at Gingrich 360. If you've been enjoying Newt's World, I hope you'll go to Apple Podcasts and both rate us with 5 stars and give us a review so others can learn what it's all about. I'm Newt Gingrich. This is Newt's World.